Oh, yeah. Okay, so obviously, one of the funnest parts of this show, why we do it, is so we can talk about random characters like Helm Hammerhand. Of our Beowulf special.
I know. When things were feeling pretty epic. We've got chapter 7 of the Two Towers. This is Helm's Deep.
This is a big one. Not as big as the movie, though. It was fun, though. This was still real good, you know?
Were you able to envision anything from this chapter without thinking of the movie first?
Yeah, because Éomer was here. He wasn't there in the movie.
Okay, fair.
You know, this one... The geography is a headache. That's what I always remember about this chapter. Every single time I get confused. But yeah, because the geography is different, you know, like the caves aren't just behind the stronghold, you know? Like they're off to the side. But I guess we'll talk about that later. Anyways, good chapter. What are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about, obviously, the lead up to getting to Helm's Deep. We have to lay out the geography of it because it's so confusing. And then we'll probably just jump straight into the battle itself. And, oh, obviously we have to talk about who Helm's Deep is named after. Such a great story.
Okay.
And maybe if we have time, we'll talk about draft notes, but I don't have that much great stuff for it, so maybe not. But before that, Cliff's notes.
Okay. So, Aragorn, Gandalf, Legolas, Gimli, Théoden, and the Rohirrim make for Helm's Deep, which is an impregnable mountain fortress. They get word that the Westmark... the western part of Rohan, has been attacked by orcs and wild men, who are chasing the survivors to Helm's Deep. Théoden's army arrives at Helm's Deep barely before the pursuing orcs do, and are relieved to find much of the fortress already manned with soldiers who fled the Westmark. Before they can catch their breath, the attack begins. The orc army is massive and progressively breaches the layers of fortifications, making their way into the valley and caves where the people of Rohan are hiding. Valiant efforts from Aragorn, Éomer, Legolas, and Gimli can't keep them at bay. When all seems lost and the orcs breach the final wall, Théoden and his riders launch down the valley on horses and crush the orcs. As Théoden reaches the outer battlements, day breaks, with Gandalf leading the missing Westmark army in a vicious rout of the orc forces, destroying the remainder of the invading host.
All right, excellent. Nice. This is a good chapter. All right, so let's jump right in. Let's try to go kind of quick just for like the lead up stuff. Anyways, okay, so the chapter starts off where the last one left off, with them setting out from Edoras, the whole army, Théoden, Gandalf at the heads. And so they were riding for a day. They see darkness towards Isengard, and there's all that cliche like storms come and talk. So they have a bunch of that with Gandalf, and then there's cool descriptions of the twilight here. You know, like I like the one sentence, the spear of the riders were tipped with fire as the last shafts of light kindled. That's a cool line, you know.
Yeah.
And Gandalf, you know, he first tells, it's like, this will be a black night.
Mm-hmm.
And then a solo horseman comes up to him. You want to read what he says there?
He came, a weary man with dinted helm and cloven shield. Slowly he climbed from his horse and stood there a while gasping. At length he spoke. Is Éomer here? He asked. You come at last, but too late, and with too little strength. Things have gone evilly since Théodred fell. We were driven back yesterday over the Isen with great loss. Many perished at the crossing. Then at night fresh forces came over the river against our camp. All Isengard must be emptied, and Saruman has armed the wild hillmen and herdfolk of Denland beyond the rivers. And these also he loosed upon us. We were overmastered. The shield wall was broken. Erkenbrand of Westfold has drawn off those men he could gather toward his fastness in Helm's Deep. The rest are scattered. Where is Éomer? Tell him there is no hope ahead. He should return to Edoras before the wolves of Isengard come here.
All right, so lots of good plot stuff for us to analyze there.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
So stuff's going badly for Rohan at the River Aizen, the crossing at the fords there. Mm-hmm. So Aizen, obviously it's near Isengard, so the Isengard mm-hmm. army of Uruk-hai is coming at him.
Mm-hmm.
Who was there defending it was this Theodred guy who was Theoden's son. So mm-hmm. he's dead. Which is, that was kind of, that might, like, that's hard to...
It was mentioned briefly in the last chapter.
Right. For some reason, it's not more central that the king's son is dead. Mm-hmm. But whatever. We got to go with it. Let's see. What else did you just find interesting there? Oh, Dunland. So there's wild men from Dunland who are working with these orcs. And those people hate the Rohirrim. So remember those birds that spied them before they got to Moria?
Mm-hmm.
Those birds might have come from Dunland. So this is like a land in between where they were near Moria and between Isengard, but on the west side of the Misty Mountains. And those people...
So sort of above Fangorn Forest.
No. On the west side of the Misty Mountains. Fangorn's on the east side of the Misty Mountains.
Okay.
And so those people, they hate Rohan because they think Rohan stole their land from them 500 years ago when they moved in.
Okay.
So they're just an ancient enemy, but they're mm-hmm. not just orcs, they're men, which is mm-hmm. a little bit.
And my mental image of this is Medeseld and Edoras, the capital, was in the south of Rohan.
Yeah.
Helm's Deep is sort of in the southwest corner, and Isengard is in the north. And now Théoden and Aragorn, Gandalf, they're bolting, you know, from this south capital over to the fortress in the southwest. Meanwhile, you've got the armies of orcs coming down from Isengard, sort of coming out of the north, right?
Yeah.
These folks who we've just seen this lone rider come from are the first to be overtaken.
Yeah, they've been defending it for like a, I don't know, at least a couple days of like fierce fighting, but like more or less for the past couple months probably.
Okay.
And so... Now the situation is the worst because basically everybody at the River Aizen has failed at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anything else that was super interesting? They brought up a shield wall. I always like it when they do that. Those mm-hmm. are cool. That's like...
Is that like Roman legions?
Like, yeah, well, Roman legions were the best, but you see it in like... I think Vikings did them. The Spartans did it, you know, like in 300 and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Romans... were the best at the shield wall. Like, if you want to see what that's like, just look up HBO Rome, like, opening scene. Because, like, the whole show opens with them just in, like, battle formation. Mm-hmm. And, like, they got, like, the super efficient commander who's, like, blowing whistles, so they're each doing, like, 2-minute shifts on the front, just, like, kind of stabbing with the... And it's, you know, you're working as a unit with, like, the shields to the side, mm-hmm. and then you just got a place where your sword can go out and stab them. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why the Roman swords were kind of short, so that they could just stab like that. And right. then after 2 minutes, you just rotate like 6 ranks back because you have these things are like 6 men deep, and then the mm-hmm. fresh line comes to the front, and you just keep rotating, and it's no surprise that they were able to conquer the Mediterranean with that kind of military power.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then okay, so sorry, that was a side note. Anyways, last important thing from here. Erkenbrand is now in charge of this area, you would presume. And it sounds like this thing's saying he's at Helm's Deep now.
Or at least they thought he was making his way there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And it sounds Erkenbrand is maybe the, in terms of rank, the equivalent of Éomer, right? Éomer was in charge of the East Mark. This guy's in charge of the West Mark.
Well, now he is. Théodred was before him.
Gotcha. Okay.
But now that he's dead, yeah, he's the leading. Okay. Rank. Okay, and then the other interesting thing was this guy kept saying, like, well, where is Éomer? Where is Éomer? And so then it's actually Théoden who comes and answers him, and he basically says, we're not turning around until we do battle. You know, and Théoden has the good line there. He says, you thought I remained in Medisild, bent like an old tree under winter snow. So it was when you rode to war, but a west wind has shaken the boughs. This guy, when he had left, he had assumed Théoden was just old and under Wormtongue's power and, you know, was going to be useless, so he had to rely on Éomer at best and mm-hmm, stuff. But, like, mm-hmm. now Théoden's back, and now I feel like this... I appreciate this more when he says this, because this really kind of does feel like, for me at least, this does feel something like either old Beowulf when he's going to fight the dragon, or it sounds like Hrothgar, who, like, you know, he's the old warrior, you know, and he's a good guy and good king and stuff, but he's like, he's definitely just older now, you know. Mm-hmm. And I see both of them in the Theoden in this chapter.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess I see more old Beowulf than Hrothgar.
Okay.
But definitely a similar sense of the sort of northern courage that you've talked about before.
Yeah.
Is like the sense of honor to go into battle, even if the official odds don't look good.
Right, right. Yeah, okay, so the whole company, they ride on, but then it's Gandalf that says, what does Gandalf say? Why don't you take Gandalf?
Ride, Théoden, Gandalf said. Ride to Helm's Deep. Go not to the fords of Isen, and do not tarry on the plain. I must leave you for a while. Shadowfax must bear me now on a swift errand. Turning to Aragorn and Éomer and the men of the king's household, he cried, keep well the Lord of the Mark till I return. Await me at Helm's Gate. Farewell.
He spoke a word to Shadowfax, and like an arrow from a bow, the great horse sprang away. Even as they looked, he was gone, a flash of silver in the sunset, a wind over the grass, a shadow that fled and passed from sight. Snowman snorted and reared, eager to follow, but only a swift bird on the wing could have overtaken him. So, all right, so Gandalf's gone, you know, in typical Gandalf fashion, very playing his cards close to the chest, or holding his cards close to the chest there.
Right, right.
But anyways,
I think worthy to note, though, that he bolts off as soon as this messenger has come in, bearing word of what's going on in the west. Right,
right. And then, of course, well, obviously he tells him to go to Helm's Deep. So now we're going to go to the title place of the chapter.
Mm-hmm. The host turned away now from the roads to the fords of Isend and bent their course southward. Night fell, and still they rode on. The hills drew near, but the tall peaks of Thrihirn were already dim against the darkening sky. Still some miles away, on the far side of the Westfold Vale, lay a green coombe, a great bay in the mountains, out of which a gorge opened in the hills. Men of that land called it Helm's Deep, after a hero of old wars who had made his refuge there. Ever steeper and narrower it wound inward from the north, under the shadow of Thrihirn, till the crow-haunted cliffs rose like mighty towers on either side, shutting out the light. At Helm's Gate, before the mouth of the deep, there was a heel of rock thrust outward by the northern cliff. There upon its spur stood high walls of ancient stone, and within them was a lofty tower. Men said that in the far-off days of glory of Gondor, the Sea Kings had built here this fastness with the hands of giants. The Hornburg it was called, for a trumpet sounded upon the tower, echoed in the deep behind, as if armies long forgotten were issuing to war from caves beneath the hills. A wall, too, the men of old had made from the Hornburg to the southern cliff, barring the entrance to the gorge. Beneath it, a wide culvert, the deeping stream passed out. About the feet of the Horn Rock it wound, and flowed then in a gully through the midst of a green gore, sloping gently down from Helm's Gate to Helm's Dyke. Thence it fell to the deeping coombe, and out into the Westfold Vale. There in the Hornburg at Helm's Gate, Erkenbrand, master of Westfold on the borders of the Mark, now dwelt. As the days darkened with the threat of war, being wise, he had repaired the wall and made the fastness strong.
Mm. All right, that was a lot of geography.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, when you read this, every single time I read this, I get confused as he goes through when he starts this part, and then for like the next couple pages I'm confused, but it slowly gets resolved again. But my first question is, what the hell is a coombe?
I don't know. I've never I do not know.
Okay, I did a Google search and it sounds like it's a valley. Okay.
Okay.
So just like
Tolkien has a lot of words for valleys.
I know, right?
But Dale, well, Vale, Dingle.
Well, coombe, I don't know, that one's probably like Welsh too for him, you know. We know how much he likes that. But you know, there's the deeping coombe, eventually we're gonna hear about a deeping wall, and then there's Helm's Deep, Helm's Gate, Helm's Dyke. It's like, how do you keep all these you know, together? And what, there's the river, what's the river called? I bet that's called like, yeah, the deeping stream, you know, we got one of those too, like how do you like keep up with all of these? So anyways,
I wonder, maybe Tolkien's got some precedent in English where like in old English they just, a lot of names are formed out of combinations of other words that refer to the geography.
Yeah,
Stratford upon Tyne or something like that, like a name that's art, like words that are conglomerations of other words that refer to geography, and then they're continuously layered. So like the deep just refers to this sort of crevice slit in the big mountain face. And yeah. then things start to be named after the deep, like the deeping something, the deeping stream. So I could imagine something like that. But right. basically, if you're having trouble envisioning it, I see this as like, you know, the face of a mountain, like no foothills, just right. pretty steep mountains rising out of the plains, like almost a sheer cliff. And then within that, there's like a narrow slot canyon or just a narrow canyon cut into the rock.
No, see, I think the Coombe is like a wide valley. So it's just slowly, 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 you know.
Okay, so it funnels upwards.
The fort is facing north, but yeah. And then the valley, like, they're definitely, when we read about it, when they are riding there, they're definitely mm-hmm. going steadily upwards the whole time. But yeah, you're right that, like, no real foothills of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, they reach the White Mountains. So
or the
like,
foothills are already around them, but the valley itself is, it's like yeah. a wide valley that tapers as it gets higher up.
Yeah, I mean, the White Mountains, though, they're potentially just, like, straight up like the Alps, you know, like, uh-huh. same geography kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
Like, no foothills in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yes, eventually the valley narrows so much that across it they built this dike, which we'll hear about later. But the dike is, like, the first, what's another word for battle line? First defense.
Fortification and then, or battlement.
Right. Right, and then from there, it keeps narrowing that they can just build a whole wall across it with this Hornburg mm-hmm. Fortress, mm-hmm. Like, next to the wall. And then behind that, then it gets to be, like, a super narrow, I guess it's still a valley, but, like, that's the deep itself. Like, the deep is the part behind
That's more canyon than valley.
Right, yeah, at that point, you're definitely in a canyon, and then that leads to some caves that I think we'll talk about later mm-hmm. in the chapter, or the next chapter, whatever. But yeah, so that's the geography of it. Valuable resource for this is the Atlas of Middle Earth. Still goes down as one of the best gifts I never asked for, that I got for Christmas or something. But yeah, that was a good one. It really helps clear up the Helm's Deep geography.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Anyways, let's keep moving.
Yeah. So, anyways, if you get confused with all the words, there's a narrow mouth of this canyon that's surrounded by concentric rings of fortifications, and each ring has a different name, yeah. and we'll see how they come into play throughout the story.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about them again here mm-hmm. as they come up. Okay, so the scouts report that there's wolves in the valley of the Deeping Coombe, I assume. I guess that's what they mean by when they say in the valley, right?
Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they can't be meaning at the fords of Eisen because they're not going to go there. And then the scouts are saying Erkenbrand is not at Helm's Deep, it seems, I think mm-hmm. that's what I gathered. You know, mm-hmm. again, this is all confusing. This is up there for most confusing 5 pages in the book. And it made it sound like he was waiting. All right, whatever. Okay, screw it. I'm just going to keep going. But and then these scouts also saw Gandalf and Wormtongue running around. So I don't really get what direction these scouts are coming from. But
I think these scouts rode out of the north. So, you know, as the main company, Théoden, Aragorn, have been cutting west across the bottom of Rohan. Different folks are coming out of the north. First that Lone Rider. Now they're closer to everyone's channeling together. Now more scouts have come out of the north. And they're saying, it sounds like Erkenbrand hasn't made it to Helm's Deep yet. And he will likely be overtaken. Because we think we saw him. Last time we knew about his whereabouts, he was north of us. And now there's orcs hot on our path coming south. So he's probably not going to make it. Meanwhile, yeah, they've seen Gandalf and also Wormtongue, not together, but flying all over the plains on their way down.
Yeah, dude, the Westfold's a hot mess right now. Holy
mm-hmm,
crap.
Mm-hmm.
And what they also said, too, is there's a great host still coming out of the north, many times greater than their own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so then Éomer, bringing clarity, she's just like, okay, we're going to cut through who's between us and Helm's Deep. We're going to make our defense at the fortress, okay? So I guess this valley is kind of big at the beginning where there's some orcs lurking around already.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it's weird that the orcs are in front of scouts, though. You know, but whatever. We'll just keep going because it's so confusing.
Well, it sounds like it's also some of these wild men who aren't organized in any fashion. So they may have already... Some of them may have already arrived here, but the main army is still on its way.
Okay. All right. So then they ride through the night through this valley, and there's not many orcs in there, traveling, roaming bands, and then they flee whenever they see the riders, too.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got a quote. You want to take that one?
The rumor of war grew behind them. Now they could hear, borne over the dark, the sound of harsh singing. They had climbed far up into the deeping coombe when they looked back. Then they saw torches, countless points of fiery light upon the black fields behind, scattered like red flowers, or winding up from the lowlands like long flickering lines. Here and there a larger blaze leapt up.
Okay, so this is also weird that this huge army seems to be, like, making ground on them while they're on horseback with lesser numbers. I find that weird, but whatever, I'm going to go with it.
There's suggestion that because it's at night, the horses are moving more slowly. That was dropped in there. And then we've heard that the Uruk-hai just love to run. I remembered when they took Merry and Pippin, they just ran like the wind and kept going.
Yeah, you really think they're running, though? I don't know about that.
Hard to say. I mean, okay. I agree with you that it's dubious.
All right, so then it's at that point that Aragorn says, I'll be Aragorn. Aragorn says, it is a great host and follows us hard.
They bring fire, said Théoden, and they are burning as they come. Rick, cot, and tree. This was a rich vale and had many homesteads. Alas for my folk.
Would that day was here, and we might ride down upon them like a storm out of the mountain, said Aragorn. It grieves me to fly before them.
We need not fly much further, said Éomer. Not far ahead now lies Helm's Dyke, an ancient trench and rampart scored across the coombe, 2 furlongs below Helm's Gate. There we can turn and give battle.
Nay, we are too few to defend the dyke, said Théoden. It is a mile long or more, and the breach in it is wide.
At the breach, our rear guard must stand if we are pressed, said Éomer.
Okay, so that was a description of the Helm's Dyke, which is that first line that they come to. So it's a mile across this. So the valley by this point, when it gets to Helm's Dyke, has narrowed to a mile across.
Mm-hmm.
And the dyke, when they say dyke, they basically just mean a huge wall of dirt, which is usually known as a rampart. And then when you dig a wall of dirt, you probably dig a trench in front of it. And that's, you know, you use the dirt out of the trench to make the wall. And then maybe you put, like, spikes or something in the trench.
Mm-hmm.
But then also they said the breach in this, because I guess there's no, like, gate, you know. So the breach in the middle is, like, where you pass through, but it's really big.
It's so also Théoden, where the stream passes out of.
Right. And so Théoden's saying, like, no, we're not defending that crap. Like, that's going to be way too hard. We don't have enough men to do that. We got to go further back. So it's like, all right, I guess fair enough, you know?
But Éomer says at least some people have to stay there because it's kind of a key spot.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, let's see what happens here. But anyways, they come to the breach where there are the guards. Turns out Erkenbrand left lots of men to guard, and more have escaped there already. So one of the people is this gambling guy. What does he say, Clifford?
Maybe. We have 1,000 fit to fight on foot, said Gambling, an old man, the leader of those that watch the dyke. But most of them have seen too many winters, as I have, or too few, as my son's son here. What news of Erkenbrand? Word came yesterday that he was retreating hither, with all that is left of the riders of Westfold. But he has not come.
I fear that he will not come now, said Éomer. Our scouts have gained no news of him, and the enemy fills all the valley behind us.
I would that he had escaped, said Théoden. He was a mighty man. In him lived the valor of Helm the Hammerhand. But we cannot await him here. We must draw all our forces now behind the walls. Are you well stored? We bring little provision, for we rode forth to open battle, not to a siege.
Behind us in the caves of the deep are 3 parts of the folk of Westfold, young and old, children and women, said Gambling. But great store of food and many beasts and their fodder have also been gathered.
That is well, said Éomer. They are burning or despoiling all that is left in the vale.
If they come to bargain for our goods at Helm's Gate, they will pay a high price, said Gambling.
So it sounds like they don't really think it'll be a siege, but they're worried they might be hunkering down for a siege at this point.
Yeah, but it seems like they're better stocked than we expected, so that's
right.
Good.
Right.
Also, they mentioned this hero of old, a certain Helm the Hammerhand.
Yes.
Dude.
I'm going to guess that that's what Helm's Deep is named after.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so obviously one of the funnest parts of the show, why we do it, is so we can talk about random characters like Helm Hammerhand. So let me tell you all about this guy. Clifford, did you happen to read Appendix A, Section 2 about the House of Errol?
Many years ago, perchance, but not really.
Yeah, did you actually?
Nothing coming to mind.
Did you really read it?
I think I read all the appendixes.
Really? Yeah, Appendix A and B, excellent. They're great. The other ones are all right, too. But those are the best ones. So anyways, they got, like, a whole section in there about, like, the history of Rohan and, like, some of the kings. And so Tolkien, he... I'm going to quote some stuff from that, but Tolkien says, of the kings of the Mark between Errol, who we know is the founder, right, and Théoden, most is said of Helm Hammerhand. He was a grim man of great strength. So they had two funny stories about him. The first one was just kind of goofy, but, like, I guess there was one of his, I don't know, kind of lords, you know, who ruled, like, a borderland with the Dunlings, or Dunlendings. Mm-hmm. That's what they're calling these Dunlenders. I would have called them Dunlenders. Anyways, these Dunlendings. Mm-hmm. And so Helm suspects that this guy's a traitor to him, so he mistrusts him completely. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like him at all. And so this guy was really fat, and he's, you know, he calls him fat to his face because he was wide in the belt. And so this guy's very insulted by that, and Helm says, the king does not permit brawls in his house, but men are freer outside. And so they walk outside, and Helm just, like, you know, just one-on-one outside, like, the city gates and stuff. Like, they're just talking, and then Helm's just like, I don't like you. We're going to fight now. And Helm just knocks him out in one punch, and then he soon dies after that.
Jeez.
And then, now, yeah, so that one was funny. But now, here's the great story, and I'm just going to kind of quote the whole thing. It's slightly long, but, like, I don't know. If you made it to episode, you know, 50-something of this show, I think you can put up with this. Okay, so 4 years later, after that event, where he punched him in the face, great troubles came to Rohan, and no help could be sent from Gondor. For three fleets of the Corsairs attacked it, and there was war on all its coasts. At the same time, Rohan was again invaded from the east, and the Dunlendings, seeing their chance, came over the Isen and down from Isengard. It was soon known that Wolf was their leader. Wolf is the son of the guy who got killed by being punched in the face really hard.
Okay.
They were a great force, for they were joined by enemies of Gondor that had landed at the mouths of Lefnuin and Isen. The Rohirrim were defeated, and their land was overrun, and those who were not slain or enslaved fled to the dales of the mountains. Helm was driven back with great loss from the crossings of Isen and took refuge in the Hornburg and the ravine behind, which was after known as Helm's Deep. There he was besieged. Wolf took Edoras and sat in Medisil and called himself king. There Haleth, Helm's son, fell, last of all, defending the doors. Soon afterwards, the long winter began, and Rohan lay under snow for nearly 5 months, November to March. Both the Rohirrim and their foes suffered grievously in the cold, and in the Dirith that lasted longer. In Helm's Deep, there was a great hunger after Yule. I think that's like New Year's, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And being in despair against the king's council, Hama, his younger son, led men out on a sortie and foray, but they were lost in the snow. Helm grew fierce and gaunt for famine and grief, and the dread of him alone was worth many men in the defense of the burg. He would go out by himself, clad in white, and stalk like a snow troll into the camps of his enemies, and slay many men with his hands. It was believed that if he bore no weapon, no weapon could bite on him. The Dunlendings said that if he could not find food, he ate men. That tale lasted long in Dunland. Helm had a great horn, and soon it was marked that before he sallied forth, he would blow a blast upon it that echoed in the deep. Then so great a fear fell on his enemies that instead of gathering to take him or kill him, they fled away from the coombe. One night men heard the horn blowing, but Helm did not return. In the morning there came a sun gleam, the first for long days, and they saw the white figure standing still on the dike alone, for none of the Dunlendings dared come near. There stood Helm, dead as stone, but his knees were unbent. Yet men said that the horn was still heard at times in the deep, and the wraith of Helm would walk among the foes of Rohan and kill men with fear. Soon after the winter broke, then Firolaf, son of Hild, Helm's sister, came down out of Dunharrow, to which many had fled, and with a small company of desperate men he surprised Wolf and Medisild and slew him, and regained Edoras. There were great floods after the snows, and the Vale of Entwash became a vast fen. The eastern invaders perished or withdrew, and there came help at last from Gondor, by the roads both east and west of the mountains. Before the year was ended, the Dunlendings were driven out, even from Isengard, and then Firolaf became king. Helm was brought from the Hornburg and laid in the ninth mound. Ever after, the white Sibyl Meini,
grew there most thickly, so that the mound seemed to be snow-clad. When Fyrleif died, a new line of mounds was begun. And that was the story of Helm Hammerhand.
Nice.
Leave it to Tolkien to come up with that side story and put it well at the end of the book.
Uh-huh. Buried in the appendix.
Oh, yeah. But it's a good one. Okay, with that, I think we're about ready to talk about the battle.
Okay, let's do it.
Oh, wait, no, we need a description of the Hornburg and the Deeping Wall. Okay, so Theoden's going to be at the Hornburg, which is the fortress mm-hmm. on the side, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then there's the Deeping Wall that goes across the rest of the valley behind the dike.
Okay. This is like the primary battlement, right?
Right, this is the thing you see in the movie.
Right, if this were a castle, this would be like the main wall of the castle.
Yeah, yeah. But then, yeah, you want to read about this wall, though?
The Deeping Wall was 20 feet high, so thick that four men could walk abreast across the top, sheltered by a parapet over which only a tall man could look. Here and there were clefts in the stone through which a man could shoot. This battlement could be reached by a stair running down from a door in the outer court of the Hornburg. Three flights of steps led also up to the wall from the deep behind. But in front it was smooth, and the great stones of it were set with such skill that no foothold could be found at their joints. And at the top, they hung over like a sea-delved cliff.
Mm. So, okay, so that's going to be a pretty good wall for defense. Mm-hmm. Now, despite this, it seems like if the enemy throws all their force at the wall, the good guys could be in trouble. But then again, if they throw their force at any part of this fortress, they could probably overwhelm it, you know, any mm-hmm. way you slice it. So we'll see what happens. Gimli thinks that he approves of the stonework of this building, mm-hmm. But Legolas doesn't like it very much. And then Gimli wants to sleep, which prompts me to think, like, well, what time is it? Like, it feels like it's already past midnight, you know?
Right, right. It's late. Because they've been riding in the dark for a while before they even got here.
Well, a couple of sentences later, we find out that it is midnight.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird, but mm-hmm. whatever. Okay, and so now, all right, so now we're about ready to talk about the battle. But I do actually want to just comment on the movie here really quick. Possibly people listening to this haven't seen the movie yet. Whatever, maybe there's like 1%. This is kind of the reason I like the Fellowship movie better than the Two Towers movie, is because the Two Towers movie, they make like a 40-minute, you know, 40 minutes of scenes just gearing up for this battle, when in reality there's like a couple hours in between, you know, and like this battle is going to take place in like the course of a chapter in the middle of a book. It's not like mm-hmm. it's the climax of anything, really, whereas the movie just makes it like the climax. And like, they did an awesome job with the battle. Like, I was actually pretty impressed with how much like the battle is actually based off this chapter, like mm-hmm, the action mm-hmm. sequences that they put in there based off.
And the setting is very spot on.
Right. I think they nailed the setting, and then even the action parts, like in the book, maybe it's a smaller scale in a way, but in the movie, I don't know. That's what Peter Jackson's good at, is creating these action scenes, and he did a good job with it. So it's impressive, but like, they grow the scale of it, of the battle for the action scenes, which is kind of fun. But then they also grow the importance of this battle, which I don't really like, because they just mm-hmm. make this, like, the whole movie leads up to this battle. Tolkien actually had a letter. This is kind of crazy. He said in one of his letters, like, you know, if you're ever going to make a film adaptation of Lord of the Rings, you could probably cut out Helm's Deep if needed.
Really?
You know? Yeah, he says, like, it's only incidental to the main story, you know? Like, it's not as important as other battles to come, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's some that are, like, super integral, like, everything revolves around it, whereas Helm's Deep's not one of those. But that was Peter Jackson's choice. Like, yeah, we're going to make the movie focus on this, mm-hmm, which I don't know. I don't really like that. That's one of my biggest gripes with the movies.
But it does draw a contrast. This chapter, we basically rush headlong into this battle where the plot up to now is like, they ride from Edoras to Helm's Deep and the battle starts.
Yeah.
that's about it. Whereas in the movie, there's like you said, layers upon layers of setup, travel, small skirmishes, preparation.
Yeah, but some of those preparation scenes, it's like, they get boring. I don't know, or even dumb. The Aragorn falling off cliff scene, that was stupid. I hated that. All right, so anyways, though, orcs attack the dike first, obviously, because it's the first line. They have some, Rohan has some archers out there, and so they shoot at all the torches. Good idea. Mm-hmm. And then they do a tactical retreat back, and the orcs overwhelm that rampart. Okay, so that's about all the defense that thing has. Now mm-hmm. it says it's midnight. Okay, so now we're battling here. Then there's this big, epic lightning strike, and it's so bright that the defenders on the walls can see the whole orc army coming, which is super creepy.
Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of creepy description of it too. They said it was like a field of black corn stretching across the entire valley.
All right, I know lightning always implies rain, but like he didn't actually ever say it rained here. So was it raining?
No, there was suggestion that it was muggy and that it was gearing up for rain, but I don't think there's any mention of rain specifically. I got the implication that the thunder, lightning, and clouds were sort of like dark magic at work.
Mm.
Whether it's Saruman or Sauron or something, it travels with the orc army almost.
Yeah, but these are the Uruk-hai, though, and they don't need that. Like, they'll say that later.
Fair.
Okay, so the battle starts with basically these kind of passages. We're not going to read, like, every single battle description, but these ones are pretty good. So let's start with this.
Arrows thick as the rain came whistling over the battlements and fell clinking and glancing on the stones. Some found a mark. The assault on Helm's Deep had begun, but no sound or challenge was heard within. No answering arrows came.
So the orcs are, so they start shooting stuff and they're coming closer to the walls. But Rohan's just holding back for now, not doing anything. But then you want to take whatever I quoted next.
Then at last an answer came. A storm of arrows met them and a hail of stones. They wavered, broke, and fled back, and then charged again, broke, and charged again. And each time, like the incoming sea, they halted at a higher point. Again trumpets rang and the press of roaring men leaped forth. They held their great shields above them like a roof, while in their midst they bore two trunks of mighty trees. Behind them orc archers crowded, sending a hail of darts against the bowmen on the walls. They gained the gates. The trees, swung by strong arms, smote the timbers with a rending boom. If any man fell, crushed by a stone hurtling from above, two others sprang to take his place. Again and again the great ram swung and crashed.
Okay, so at this point, Éomer and Aragorn are seeing this ram beating against the gate, and they're on the wall.
This thing, just to be clear, this thing's like beating right below their feet, right?
No. They're on the Deeping Wall. This is over at the gate on the... So they're on the east side. The Hornburg's on the west side.
Okay.
Where the entrance is, the gate entrance is there. Uh-huh. So they're seeing it from the wall, and they're like... Well, so Aragorn says here, he says, come, this is the hour when we draw swords together. And so from there, Aragorn and Éomer run through the outer court of the Hornburg Fortress to that gate, and they gather a few men as they go. And then they do actually have a side door, like in the movie. They do actually have a side door there, and they come around and they attack the orcs. Now, there's no gap to jump. Like, I think it's just like, I don't think there's like a ramp leading up to the Hornburg, so like they don't have to jump across the chasm. And of course this is Éomer here, because he's here for the whole battle instead of Gimli, because it was Aragorn and Gimli in the movie. But it's them and like probably, you know, 20 other people that come and they all attack the orcs and clear out the gate so that they can kind of fix it up. And Aragorn's like, man, we came just in time because the hinges are all bent and everything on the gate. And Éomer's like, yeah, but we can't stay here. We gotta pile up stone on the other side of the gates and just hope it holds, right? But then it turns out a dozen of the orcs were playing dead, which is weird. Strange that that's like a battle tactic for the orcs. And so they trip Éomer as he turns to leave. But then also, surprisingly, it turns out Gimli had followed them too. So he's out here and he kills the two that are on top of Éomer. And then the rest of the orcs just flee. And then they can all go back inside the door. And then there's some, you know, enduring banter that goes on about the incident. You know?
And they blockade the side door. Orcs get clever and try to attack it.
Right. And so then the counts are actually real too. Like Gimli says at this point, he's like, I'm at 2. And Legolas is like, oh, I'm already at 20. But I am out of arrows. I think the first time I ever read this, I was surprised that that was really a thing compared to all the stuff that wasn't in Fellowship that was in the Fellowship movie. I was surprised that the counting your orcs was in the book.
Yeah.
I could have seen that as just a movie invention, but fun that it's here. Okay, so then anyways, the orcs redouble the attack on the gate afterwards, obviously. But against the Deeping Wall, the host of Isengard rose like a sea. And so there's tons of grappling hooks attaching on this thing where people are just climbing up. Orcs are just climbing up ropes. And then there's hundreds of ladders is what it says. And Aragorn and Éomer are rallying everybody on the walls to clear out like all the invaders and stuff. But some of the orcs, they go through a culvert. Okay, a culvert.
Yeah?
What is it?
A culvert, well, the most common thing that people would think of today is like next to a highway or something. One of those little tubes in the ground that lets water pass under a highway or a road or something like that.
It's just a
tunnel usually for water.
Well, and so that's what it is here, because this is what the Deeping Stream passes through from the caves.
Yeah,
at the back, presumably of the canyon.
some spring up in the canyon.
Yeah, and then so it has to go through the Deeping Wall. So in the movie, they have like a couple of like metal bars to make sure you can't walk through. They mm-hmm. don't have that here, so like the orcs just come in.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Gimli spots him. He rushes down and he's fighting them and he's killing a bunch of them, all the orcs behind the wall. And he gets some other people to help him because he's screaming so loud. And they kill everybody that's behind the wall. At this point, since we have to keep track of this, Gimli's at 21 and he goes back up to the wall to find out that Legolas is at 24 at this point.
Eomer and Aragorn leant wearily on their swords. Away on the left, the crash and clamor of the battle on the rock rose loud again, but the Hornburg still held fast, like an island in the sea. Its gates lay in ruin, but over the barricade of beams and stones within, no enemy as yet had passed.
Okay, so a couple things here. First of all, always wonder about this. What the hell does it mean when you lent wearily on their swords? How do you, like, lean on your sword?
The point is pointing to the ground, and you're like...
They're going to do that to their swords?
You're slumped on it.
You don't take Andril and dent its point.
Like these swords are... I mean, there's a note in here at one point. Gimli comes up and Legolas is actively whetting his knife. Like, he's actively sharpening his knife during battle. And there's also mention that their swords are dented, their shields are dented. In this type of setting, I think the idea is that the swords get so beat up every single battle that they're being constantly resharpened.
Maybe. I guess. I always do like that image, like, you know, you just rest your arm somehow on, the hilt of it. Yeah, but it's weird that you just do that to your sword. Like, I'm not one for, you know, taking care of stuff really well, but, like, geez, a sword like that? I would not do that. You know,
that's
like resting an instrument wrong or something.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyways, though. Okay, so it's at this point, they have a conversation about how, what do they say here? Aragorn's like, man, this night's lasting forever. It's as long as years, basically. And then that old guy Gamling's over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, dawn's not far off now. And Aragorn, you know, he makes a point to say, dawn's ever been a hope for men. So that's kind of cool. Like, that's kind of a theme in this, like, dawn, hopeful for men.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of... I don't know if it's obvious, maybe classic. Like, that's a usual thing.
The night is darkest before the dawn.
Yeah, you know, men just being afraid of night and then comforted by dawn, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in the context of Lord of the Rings, I think men first awoke at the first sunrise ever. The first sunrise ever.
Okay.
Because we talked about how they created the sun and moon out of the two trees.
Uh-huh.
And so it was at that first sunrise that men woke up.
Oh, cool. So they're intrinsically tied to the dawn of day.
Right. If we want to get a deeper meaning in this, at least in the context of the book, dawn's a hope for men.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Gamli says he's not so sure about the dawn being a hope for them this time because, you know, there are men on the other side as well who hate Rohan. And so he starts talking about the Dunlendings.
Mm-hmm.
For 500 years, they've hated them because they think they took their land. He says they also call them strawheads. Like, the Dunlendings call the Rohirrim strawheads.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that, like, a racial slur? Do we hear a really bad word here?
I feel like it's probably more like redneck or something, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Like, it would be considered an insult to them, but it's just, like, a practical reference that becomes derogatory. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Well, eventually that could turn into a racial slur, Clifford.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. All right. So anyways, though, this, like, the paragraph where Gamley's talking about that, that's another classic one of those things where it's like, no way this was said in the battle. Like, if there was ever a Helm's Deep battle, it's like, nobody's going to take the time to say this whole thing.
I mean, if Aragorn's leaning on his sword, anything goes.
Dude, no. This is what the author much later just inserts into it to, like, help give context to the story and, like, add value. But it's like, no, Gamling didn't say this. I'm calling BS. All right, so anyways.
Well, can we just take a quick pause? I didn't notice this the first time I read it, but the line that I just read, this is where they're standing and chatting about the Dunlanders.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hornburg still held fast like an island in the sea. Its gates lay in ruin, but over the barricade of beams and stones within, no enemy as yet had passed. So Does that mean that they've, like, blocked up the door? And they've, even though the door itself is destroyed, like, the entry is fully blocked with, like, their makeshift stuff? Or is there just, like, a pile of rubble where the door was and there's no orcs clambering over it for some reason?
I think there's a pile of rubble where the gates are, but, like, the rubble's kind of cleared out, like, an orc could walk through it, but there's still defenders there. But that also could be no orcs in the Hornburg yet. But then also, what when they talk about piling up stuff and make sure, like, the gates hold fast, if you look at the map, there's an inner court and an outer court of the fortress. So, like, you know, like, there's the castle, the fortress thing in the middle, but then there's, like, one consecutive concentric circle around it, and then a second one, and then that second one is where the great gate is that they went in front of to defend against the orcs, like Aragorn and Éomer.
Mm-hmm.
The outer court's under threat. The inner court is not yet, for sure.
Okay.
So now, part I was surprised was in the book, or that was in the book, that was in the movie, even though it's not as dramatic in the book as it was in the movie, is they do blow up the wall. So they put, like, the bombs and stuff in the culvert, and they blow it up. Like, that does happen. I could have totally seen the movie just, you know, taking liberties and doing that.
Right.
Now, there's no, like, Legolas shoots the guy twice and shit, and, but it's still, like, yeah, they blow it up. And so Aragorn has to jump right in there. But then more ladders are coming, and the wall is completely overwhelmed. I was surprised no shield wall action at this part. I thought this would be a good time for the Rohirrim to, you know, just line up next to each other and really just fight, you know, make a human wall when their physical walls fail. I guess not. Maybe a missed opportunity by Tolkien. All right, so now here's the tea. This is where it's definitely different than the movie. The movie puts the caves behind the Hornburg. Like, the Hornburg's kind of built into the wall. The fortress is built into the wall. And the caves are behind it. You got to go through the fortress to get to the caves. That's not true. Here, there's the fortress on the side, or you keep going down into the deep, which is the canyon, and then you get to the caves. So yeah. Okay. So when they take over the Deeping Wall, you got two choices. You can run to the Citadel, which is the Hornburg, the fortress, or you could keep running backwards into the deep. Towards the caves.
Where, or it's more just like the Hornburg is on the side. It's like the, it's like the guard station on the path that leads down.
And it's built on a great rock that's a good high place, you know? All right. So at this point, Aragorn and Legolas defend the stairway up to the Citadel. And Aragorn, he actually trips when he's running up. And there's some orcs behind him that are ready to jump all over him. But, like, somebody throws a boulder down to crush him. And Legolas had been, you know, shooting some arrows to cover him too. Oh, and so they get into the Hornburg and they close the doors. But Gimli is not with them, so hopefully he got to the caves. At this point, we're keeping track. Legolas says he's at 39. And Aragorn says, if Gimli wins back to the caves, he will pass your count. Never did I see an axe so wielded. And then also, Éomer's not there as well. Okay, so hopefully Éomer and Gimli, they went towards the caves with a bunch of other men, and they're kind of defending that, hopefully. Now, let's see. So Aragorn goes into the Hornburg Tower where Théoden is, and he's been, I guess he's been there the whole time, and he fills him in on the battle so far, which might mean, has Théoden, like, not even been watching the battle, let alone, like, you know.
It sounds like he maybe has a little window to peek out of or something like that, but Aragorn gives him the report.
I don't know. I got a little pissed at that because it's like, come on, Théoden, you were super cool. Like, you're going to go to war and everything. But then he kind of defends himself because he's, like, complaining, like, man, I'm so useless up, like, locked up in here. And so then let's go through this conversation a little bit here.
It is said that the Hornburg has never fallen to assault, said Théoden, but now my heart is doubtful. The world changes, and all that was once strong now proves unsure. How shall any tower withstand such numbers and such reckless hate? Had I known that the strength of Isengard was grown so great, maybe I should not so rashly have ridden forth to meet it, for all the arts of Gandalf. His counsel seems not now so good as it did under the morning sun.
Do not judge the counsel of Gandalf until all is over, Lord, said Aragorn.
The end will not be long, said the king, but I will not end here, taken like an old badger in a trap. Snowmane and Hassafel and the horses of my guard are in the inner court. When dawn comes, I will bid men sound Helm's horn, and I will ride forth. Will you ride with me then, son of Arathorn? Maybe we shall cleave a road, or make such an end as will be worth a song, if any be left to sing of us the hereafter.
I will ride with you, said Aragorn. Taking his leave, he returned to the walls and passed round all their circuit, enheartening the men, and lending aid wherever the assault was hot. Legolas went with him. Blasts of fire leapt up from below the shaking stones. Grappling hooks were hurled and ladders raised. Again and again, the orcs gained the summit of the outer wall, and again, the defenders cast them down. Okay, so they're defending. So this is like, there's two sets of, you know, outer court, inner court. Mm-hmm. Definitely picking that up here. But yeah, Théoden's cool. Okay, so he is going to charge. So he's going to do something as Bell. He's not just going to sit around and take this. You know, and the movie crucially gets that wrong. Like, I like the actor in the movie, but I don't like the lines they give him. Mm-hmm. Like, they make him just roll over and like want to quit and give up, and it's just like, mm-hmm. No, that's ridiculous, and that's not what he was like here. He's definitely closer to like the Beowulf guy, like the old warrior, like ready at least to make like a good end, even if he does think he's gonna die. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. So it's at this point Aragorn talks to the orcs from the top of the walls, which also goes down as possibly one of the strangest parts of the whole trilogy.
Yeah, I would throw this in with your earlier statement about confusing sections. This part, I was befuddled by.
Well, so he's trying to make some sort of parlay, which I think in a parlay you usually kind of try to strike a bargain between like the two warring sides. Like, you stop for a minute to have peace to strike something.
But it's not clear why Aragorn...
Why he would do that, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't expect them to surrender. He's not planning to surrender.
Right, so like, yeah, because
he doesn't know them to be reasonable.
Right, like, I'm surprised the orcs even stop to, like, listen.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they don't really. They kind of just keep yelling and shooting things at him.
Yeah, I mean, the whole time they were just super proud. And then Aragorn actually, it seems like he's actually taunting them, too. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, dawn's coming. And then the Uruk-hai are like, we don't care. We're not just common orcs. Like, sun doesn't affect us, you know? And so then the orcs say, there is no parley, you have nothing to say. And then Aragorn's got this good quote here. I have still this to say, answered Aragorn. No enemy has yet taken the Hornburg. Depart, or not one of you will be spared. Not one will be left alive to take back tidings to the north. You do not know your peril.
So great a power and royalty was revealed in Aragorn, as he stood there alone above the ruined gates, before the host of his enemies, that many of the wild men paused and looked back over their shoulders to the valley, and some looked up doubtfully at the sky.
Bold words from Aragorn as they're on the losing side here.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you think this is coming from? I don't really know myself, but...
He has strong faith in the dawn, it seems like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely sounds like... I mean, he's yelling this from a battlement wall that's about to be overtaken.
Well, that battlement wall is going to be blown up, too, in two sentences.
Exactly. So, yeah, it sounds like he's flying by the seat of his pants. But, yeah, maybe he just really has a lot of faith in whatever dawn is going to bring.
Okay, so now we get to the finale.
If we haven't adequately conveyed it, it really seems like all is lost right now, right? The first battlement's been broken. The main wall's been broken. The outer wall of the citadel is about to break. And orcs... We don't know what's going on up in the canyon, but orcs have stormed up the canyon. Éomer and Gimli are missing, and it sounds like the orcs are about to break the first level of the citadel. Théoden and Aragorn are going to ride out to a kind of honorable or noble but perilous venture into the orc army, which for all we know is massive and still going on strong.
Yeah, right. But it's not... Yeah, but don't compare it to the movie where they're down to, like, 10 men. Like, it's not that bad.
No, I know. But I'm saying, the orcs are clearly making strong progress.
Yeah, and this is a very tight spot that they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dawn better bring something good and quick. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, they can't keep this up.
But the orcs laughed with loud voices, and a hail of darts and arrows whistled over the wall as Aragorn leapt down. There was a roar and a blast of fire. The archway of the gate above which he had stood a moment before crumbled and crashed in smoke and dust. The barricade was scattered as if by thunderbolt. Aragorn ran to the king's tower. But even as the gate fell and the orcs about it yelled, preparing to charge, a murmur arose behind them, like a wind in the distance, and it grew to a clamor of many voices crying strange news in the dawn. The orcs looked upon the rock, hearing the rumor of dismay, wavered, and looked back. And then, sudden and terrible, from the tower above, the sound of the great horn of Helm rang out.
Ho, ho, ho. All right. What was this? Were the orcs complaining about something strange behind them?
Yeah, so it sounds like something's going on behind them, and the horn rings ahead of them, and the day is breaking, and the wall blows up all at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah?
All right, so we'll keep tabs on that.
Yes.
And yeah, so let's keep going. Let's probably finish this off.
Okay. All that heard that sound trembled. Many of the orcs cast themselves on their faces and covered their ears with their claws. Back from the deep, the echoes came, blast upon blast, as if on every cliff and hill a mighty herald stood. But on the walls, men looked up, listening with wonder, for the echoes did not die. Ever the horn blast wound on among the hills, nearer now and louder than they answered one to another, blowing fierce and free.
"Helm, Helm," the rider shouted. "Helm is arisen and comes back to war. Helm for King Theoden."
And with that shout, the king came. His horse was white as snow, golden was his shield, and his spear was long. At his right hand was Aragorn, Elendil's heir. Behind him rode the lords of the House of Arryl, the young. Light sprang in the sky. Night departed.
"Forth, Arilingus!"
With a cry and a great noise they charged. Down from the gates they roared, over the causeway they swept, and they drove through the hosts of Isengard as a wind among grass. Behind them from the deep came the stern cries of men issuing from the caves, driving forth the enemy. Out poured all the men that were left upon the rock, and ever the sound of blowing horns echoed in the hills. On they rode, the king and his companions. Captains and champions fell or fled before them. Neither orc nor man withstood them. Their backs were to the swords and spears of the riders, and their faces to the valley. They cried and wailed, for fear and great wonder had come upon them with the rising of the day. So King Theoden rode from Helm's Gate and clove his path through the great dike. There the company halted. Light grew bright about them. Shafts of sun flared above the eastern hills and glimmered on their spears. But they sat silent on their horses, and they gazed down upon the deepening gloom. The land had changed. Where before the green dale had lain, its grassy slopes lapping the ever-mounting hills, there now a forest loomed. Great trees, bare and silent, stood, rank on rank, with tangled bow and hoary head. Their twisted roots were buried in the long green grass. Darkness was under them. Between the dike and the eaves of that nameless wood, only two open furlongs lay. There now cowered the proud hosts of Saruman, in terror of the king and in terror of the trees. They streamed down from Helm's Gate until all above the dike was empty of them, but below it they were packed like swarming flies. Vainly they crawled and clamored about the walls of the coombe, seeking to escape. Upon the east, too, sheer and stony was the valley's side. Upon the left, from the west, their final doom approached. There, suddenly upon a ridge, appeared a rider clad in white, shining in the rising sun. Over the low hills the horns were sounding. Behind him, hastening down the long slopes, were a thousand men on foot. Their swords were in their hands. Amid them strode a man tall and strong. His shield was red. As he came back to the valley's brink, he set to his lips a great black horn and blew a ringing blast.
"Erkenbrand," the rider shouted. "Erkenbrand! Behold the white riders," cried Aragorn. "Gandalf has come again." "Mithrandir, Mithrandir," said Legolas. "This is wizardry indeed. Come, I would look on this forest ere the spell changes."
The hosts of Isengard roared, swaying this way and that, turning from fear to fear. Again the horn sounded from the tower. Down through the breach of the dike charged the king's company. Down from the hills leapt Erkenbrand, lord of Westfeld. Down leapt Shadowfax, like a deer that runs sure-footed in the mountains. The white rider was upon them, and the terror of his coming filled the enemy with madness. The wild men fell on their faces before him. The orcs reeled and screamed and cast aside both sword and spear. Like a black smoke driven by a mounting wind, they fled. Wailing, they passed under the waiting shadow of the trees, and from that shadow none ever came again.
Damn. Good end. Good end. What a chapter.
The tide's turned.
Dude, some stuff to talk about here. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so the trapped heroes, they're ready to pour out in either one final roll of the dice or to just have a glorious death.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly everything's totally different.
Yeah.
Okay, this is definitely one of those moments of eucatastrophe, you know, like the unexpected good turn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What the hell is this dark forest that's blocking the valley, like the whole coombe, the whole deepened coombe? Like, it's just filled up with the forest. How is that possible at all?
Yeah, this, the first time I read this, never saw the movie or anything, that totally threw me for a loop.
Yeah. All right, there's a couple of reasons of why he would do that, or there's one big reason of why he would do that, but I think we'll just hit it in the next chapter because I think it'll just fit better there.
Okay.
Plus, I don't want to talk about it here. Anyways, but what I really thought when I was reading it this time, all right, they're just rushing out from, you know, their fortress, and they're coming out from, like, these walls where they don't really see anything going on, and there's other people coming out from the caves where, like, they don't really know what's in front of them besides their enemy. This, to me, maybe this is too much of a stretch, but this kind of felt like maybe this is what it was like in a World War One trench, where these troops, they're barely able to look over the side of the trench, and then, you know, they're planning, like, all right, we got a final charge today, we got one big charge to go, and they come over the top, and instead of, like, being met with, like, a hail of bullets, all of a sudden, like, the landscape's something they didn't expect to see at all. You know, like, that's kind of how this felt to me.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. I could totally imagine, even if Tolkien wasn't in a parallel circumstance himself, still envisioning something like this after fighting in the trenches in World War One.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's kind of... Now, here's where the movie image is like, I can't... Obviously, Gandalf's, you know, Gandalf comes with the army to save him, right?
Right.
Like, you can't get that image out of your head when you see that movie. Uh-huh. So, like, I don't know. Maybe that was obvious that it was coming or something. Obviously, if you've seen the movies, it was obvious. But this is kind of an interesting end to the chapter, because, like, victory for sure, no doubt. But it's still confusing. Like, where did Gandalf get all these troops from? Where the hell is this whole forest from? Like, what is this? Like, how do these trees get here?
Right.
Like, it's strange. And that's kind of a fun end. I like that. And it'll be something good to find out at the beginning of the next chapter.
So, any answers to that? Or are those all rhetorical questions?
No, we'll answer them next chapter.
Okay. Even where Gandalf got his army?
Yeah, we'll do that then.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really remember Clifford.
I remember.
Well, I mean I half remember, and I know where the trees come from, but yeah, whatever. Okay.
One little thing I wanted to note that I thought was kind of interesting. There's a few, and this also reminded me of Beowulf, since we're in that line of thinking, the epithets, like these groupings of words.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wind over the grass comes up at least twice in the chapter. I think it's described when Gandalf leaves them at the beginning on Shadowfax, and they're described as, like, wind over the grass. And then, again, at the end, we have when Theoden is leading his horses, his men, down from the causeway. They drove through the hosts of Isengard as a wind among grass. And then there's another one that I saw come up a few times, also in a different context.
He uses the tide, you know, like approaching the walls. Like, that comes up a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Tons of analogies or tons of metaphors here throughout this whole chapter. Below, they are packed like swarming flies.
I mean, Tolkien's kind of doing it to be rhetorical, like Beowulf there, and like just give you like an image in your head for action scenes and stuff. But I think he's good at that just to get across any sort of explanation ever, because the other two that are really good at it are C.S. Lewis. You know, he'll write like a bunch of decently intellectual, like, theological works and stuff, and he'll be using analogies to help you understand something much easier, like, all the time. So I assume him and Tolkien were probably, like, talking about these over their Inklings meetings and stuff. And the other one that uses them, too, is G.K. Chesterton, who is, like, you know, the generation up that both of them would have read. So I feel like it's a combination of what you're saying, like, the old epithets and stuff, but then also, like, this is just Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, they were just good at these.
Straight up. I just looking at these last two pages, there's a whole bunch of them. The barricade was scattered as if by a thunderbolt. Shadowfax, like a deer that runs sure-footed in the mountains. The orcs reeled and cast aside, like a black smoke driven by a mounting wind that they fled. Anyways, yeah, it's cool to pay attention to.
Yeah, awesome imagery. That's also why you read the books, as opposed to watch the movies or something. It's like, yes, these passages here, this is what it's about. So epic. So great.
Theoden, like an old badger in a trap, doesn't want to end that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, a couple draft things. We haven't talked about drafts in a while, which is why I thought we would do it, but there really wasn't that much great stuff from this one. I read the chapter on the Helm's Deep drafts, and Christopher Tolkien's like, it's substantially different, so I give the full text here. So I'm reading through the full text pretty diligently, and I'm just like, Chris, this is the same thing. Like, yeah, it's simpler, but no, this is not substantially different. What, so why?
You're saying we can take that to mean that Tolkien just, this was just like, it came out of his head in like one go, pretty much.
I mean, it was simpler, but it wasn't like substantially far off. You know,
like, that's what I mean. Is like he went at it, and that was it.
Well, that's a lot of the book.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried to say that in, like, a lot of the drafts. Like, sometimes he wrote something and then he took it in a different direction. But, you know, mm-hmm. like, that's definitely what we saw in the, especially in book one. He had these scenes down, like, even the action scenes, like, where Frodo gets stabbed on Weathertop and stuff, when the first Black Rider shows up. Like, he has mm-hmm. that scene basically from the heart of it. But the whole context of it is not fleshed out at all whatsoever. And then for this one, here he's just writing a battle scene. The context of it is well established, like he knows that, but then it takes him like a draft or two to get all of the action scenes that we have in here, because there was a couple, like there was one that he threw away where like Aragorn would save Theoden from something else because Theoden would be riding in on his horse later, mm-hmm. but that was a dumb idea where they were all going to come in separate companies instead of just marching together to mm-hmm. Helm's Deep. They were all going to come in like in smaller bands, which that doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then I think the fighting was originally supposed to take place on the dike, but then they're like, no, let's make a deeping wall in the Hornburg and we'll have the stuff go there. And then, oh, this is kind of interesting, because this line survives into here too. Gimli has a line like, till now I have hewn naught but wood since I left Moria. So Christopher Tolkien points out, he's like, well, Legolas and Gimli fought some orcs at Boromir's death. They slew many there. So Christopher Tolkien, he just says, he's like, I do not think any explanation of this will serve. It simply is an inconsistency never observed. So it's like pointing out, you know, Tolkien, come on. Your work's not as solid as we would like. Gimli can't remember a fight scene that he's had.
So. I wouldn't put it past Gimli.
Yeah. Well, that's true too. All right, Clifford, we're back. Another one.
Indeed we are.
This was the Helm's Deep chapter. It actually turned out to be reasonable length. It was only an hour, so maybe we shouldn't screw it up by taking forever here. But,
well, fitting. I felt like Helm's Deep was a very nicely packed, don't you think?
Yeah, but we had to discuss, like, you know, important stuff like Helm Hammerhand, you know?
No, fair. So I've got a siren in the background.
Oh, I can hear it. I know. I have so many more note things now that the tour's been on. Okay, I have nothing to say about Helm's Deep.
So we aced it.
No, I didn't listen to it again yet. I didn't put the Beowulf episode out until today, partly because I just forgot Sunday, but then also I had to proof listen. You know, like the last minute proof listen in case we said something that needs to be cut out. But yeah, that one's out now. I think it was, I actually had a lot of fun editing that one. And that's rare when the episode is well over 90 minutes. But it was a fun one. So hopefully everybody listens to it. Highly recommend it. It'll give you more insight kind of into Rohan, but I think more so into Theoden going forward, at least for me. Because he's basically, he's old Beowulf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what else is up with you?
Not much here, you know? Yep. I'm in a time warp, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Just weeks go by, things feel like they were yesterday or maybe 2 months ago. Darn weird.
After this, we're actually recording an episode for the first time in like...
That's true. This will bring some structure back to my life that I've been missing. Yeah, I've been out flailing in the void.
Yeah, I had to send you the Google Doc of it today, and I almost forgot that, and I almost forgot how to do it. You know? It was crazy. It's been so long.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, anyways, things are going pretty well here. I'm hanging out with the cats. Weathering wildfire season, which seems like we had, you know, got into the clear, so to speak. And it's smoky again, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I obviously am in a much better position than all the people being evacuated and having their homes burned down. I feel very sorry for them. But anyways, things are good in Denver?
Yep.
Is the cycling world staying exciting post-tour?
Dude, Julian Alaphilippe, new world champion. He's going to look so good in the rainbow jersey. I'm so excited. What a guy.
Super cool.
He's going to get his first win tomorrow today, I guess, when you listen to it. He probably has already won by the time this comes out.
Oh, that's a bold
It's not prediction. Because It's not because of this race, the Flesh Wallon. That, look it up. You can tell it. You can see if I was right or not. 2020, Flesh Wallon. It's not a bold prediction because he's won it the past 3 years, because it just always ends with this famous climb, and you either, like, one guy can figure it out and then has the ability to win on it. And that's all it comes down to. So Julian Alaphilippe, he's that guy for the past 3 years and probably the next 3 years.
Wow.
Maybe 5 years. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
But today, this is crazy. Listen to this stat. This is going around on cycling Twitter. Apparently today is the first of 48 straight days of top level cycling.
Wow.
And most of those days will have two races on them.
So this is a happy trade-off for having a condensed COVID season.
It's not that happy. I like
okay.
a slow 10-month narrative. I don't like this all being shoved into 3 months. Like, I don't know. Like, are the next couple episodes going to be any good? You'll know why. Brace if yourself. They're not. So, you know, if the Giro gets to be a good race, watch out. Watch out. Okay, well, all right. I don't want to ruin that we actually had a short one. So let's just, you got anything else?
No, nothing here.
Okay, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week. Yeah, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks, y'all.